Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. I sure am glad you did. Hey, I am calling you, I'm calling in direct from Santa's workshop here. No, it feels like it. I feel like the Nightmare Before Christmas, making Christmas. It's the last push of the season for me with my painting business, and we are just knocking them out, man. It's a weird year this year too. Not for the obvious reasons everybody's thinking, but in the commissioned orders that are coming in, I'm painting kids and puppies and then like severed heads and stuff. It's very strange. I'm not complaining. The checks are clearing, so, you know, it's a good thing, but it's just different than the norm. Anyhow, though, I am really excited about today's show because it gives me a little break, and, you know, gives my hands time to go back to normal. And but this is a fantastic, we have a fantastic guest today. He's a writer-director, and I'm pretty sure he wore a few other hats as well during this making this feature film that I just really, really dig. I watched this the other night, and man, was it cool. It's cool. The name of the film is Black Pumpkin. And our guest today is, like I said, writer-director, Mr. Ryan McGongle. I'm hoping I said that right. I asked before, but I might have messed it up. Ryan, did I butcher your name? I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Yes. Ryan McGongle.
Oh, okay.
Perfect.
Good.
Before we start, I love the intro. I felt like I was in a Sergio Leone movie walking up to the studio there. That was a pretty awesome little intro.
I'm telling you, it is so funny. Everybody asks, they're like, because, you know, I know a lot of musician friends. They're like, hey, did you get somebody to make that? And I'm like, no. What I did is I bought one of those packs of 15 royalty-free CDs or whatever, you know. That is day five when I found that after listening, you know, for a week.
Holy crap, that's amazing. Yeah,
intro.
That was great.
Yeah. So it was worth the wait. The first couple of years we did the show, I would change those up every 6 months. I'm like, after that little step, I'm like, no, we found it. We're keeping that. And so that worked.
Yeah, that's a fine. I went through those royalty-free things. That was a fine.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. Yeah, because you're just like beep, boop, boop, boop. But, you know, I guess it depends on the type of show you're trying to do. But I thought it was cool. I was actually looking for something kind of surf music-y, but I'm like, well, this is pretty cool, man. It's very Quentin Tarantino-esque. You know, I can deal with this. But anyway, yes. Now, Ryan, you've made another movie. How cool is this?
It's amazing, you know? When it's one of those things where it's a love-hate relationship, because when you start your film, you love it. And then you go through editing and you hate it. And then all of a sudden you have to start going out and pushing it. So you have to love it again. So it's back and forth. I'm telling you, it's like
Let me ask you,
the editing. Oh, go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm curious because this is such a creative movie and it's so cool. And I'm probably a little down the road from you age wise. But I grew up in the 80s, I got to tell you. And this does not look at all like an 80s movie, but there's definitely nods in this to kind of the 80s horror technique. And I'm not in the film business, so excuse my ignorance. You know, I'm just a cinephile. I just love movies. But this is such a cool movie. When you were a kid, were you like the film kid? Did you know that, you know, making movies is what you were going to be doing?
No, my way into the movie business was a weird path. In high school, like growing up, I loved like the big blockbusters, you know, Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, mm-hmm. Star Wars, all that stuff. And then one day I was introduced to Gremlins, and that kind of changed my world a little bit, because now we went from, it was like this Spielberg movie, but it had a horror aspect, and I think it just made me hungry for more horror. And then I was a very young guy during the Freddy Krueger, Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and 4, yeah. which they now refer to as the MTV Freddy. I was just brought into it. And having that 80s vibe has just stuck with me so much. And when I broke in, like for years, I just started in 2010. Before that, I was a professional wrestler in the independent leagues out here in Southern California. And I think that's what kind of gave me a taste for the entertainment aspect of it, telling stories and all that. So when it came back around, and I found myself, you know, writing a script for the original Bloody Bobby, I just really went back into that. What made me want to be a filmmaker? What excited me as a kid, and stuff like that. And
nice.
A lot of stuff going in all directions. I was influenced all over the place.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. You know, and it's crazy too, because now again, let me just start off by saying I am not what I refer to as a horror guy. I love a good horror movie. Don't get me wrong. But I have friends that are horror guys and gals. And, you know, they're almost annoying to watch a movie with, because they're like, that spleen didn't explode in the right. I'm like, how do you know what a spleen looks like, let alone explode? But anyway, they get they're almost like Star Wars fans or something. They get so, like, into it. I would imagine. Now, if it was me making a movie, I'm like, well, I don't know if I want to go in that direction, because, you know, there's a lot of crazy. But I did a quick Google search before the show. Nobody's bitching about your movie, man. Everybody's digging it. And I'm like, wow, that's quite an accomplishment. You know?
I'm just so excited that even if people hate it, that they're actually sitting and watching it. I really am. I know when it comes to the horror movie fans, I'm one of you. They have a passion for the films, and some of them like the nods that I'm doing to other horror films. Other people say that I'm pandering, which absolutely I am. I'm a fan of the genre, so I want to kind of show that. But it's all about making a film that you know you want to see and love. And if people hate it, that's cool. If people like it and they get what we're trying to go with, that's cool too.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm a painter by trade. I paint pictures of people and stuff for a living, and done that for a long time. And I watched your movie. I was watching it with my wife, Danny, and she's like, this is kind of funny almost in a way. I said, yeah, but it's pretty messed up too. If you like watch this. And I rewound it to a particular scene. And, you know, I'm like, this is, to me, cinematic pop art. You know what I mean? It's so cool and just fun, you know, for those. This is not a highbrow stuffy, you're going to go and, you know, darling, and put your pinky out and hang out with a bunch of snoots watching this movie. You're going to watch this movie with your friends, and you're all going to laugh your ass off and freak out and have a good time. And, you know, what better way is that?
I was talking to my producer about this early on, is I don't want to make movies that, you know, wins awards and no one ever sees them. I would rather have people see them and just enjoy them for what they are. My idea of horror, now I love all horror. I love those snooty ones also, those art films. But
I hear you.
My idea, I really think that horror is a community type event when you see a movie. I think that you should scream, jump, laugh, make fun of your friends when they jump. And it shouldn't be one of those films that you just sit in the chair with your hands folded in your lap. I really want that funhouse vibe. And so trying to make it a little bit quicker, trying to, you know, having the inserts of the kids, you know, as the main characters. I was really trying to tap into that younger type vibe of a funhouse at a carnival.
Well, you did, man. You did. I'm telling you, the characters, I don't want to give too much. I don't want to give any spoilers away. I want people to watch the film because, I mean, this is one of those ones, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to watch a couple times. Not because you miss stuff and you're like, well, I don't understand. Because it's fun, you know, and it's a blast to watch. But, man, the characters in this that you wrote, you like them. Now, I've seen a lot of horror movies where I didn't like the characters. I'm like, oh, good, he needs to fall into that pit. no, I don't. Maybe I might.
I find there,
I like the characters. They were believable.
Yeah. One of the things that I strongly believe in horror is you have to make the characters likable. So when you put them in danger, the audience cares. And when you kill them, especially, they care. If you just have people dying for, you know, and people can't wait for them to die, you know, I don't really think, especially when you're making an indie low-budget film, you don't have a lot of, like, the special effects aspects to turn to make the death elaborate.
Right.
But if you make that character likable and you feel sorry for him, the audience cares a little bit more. I'm glad I'm getting a lot of good feedback from the character in general. And I appreciate that because I did put a lot of effort into making those characters likable, as you said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the villain, what's the word, antagonist, you know, Bloody Bobby, I dug him too. He wasn't necessarily tropey. That's not even a word, but if you know what I mean. It was, I'm like, oh, somebody's trying to do a version of Mike Myers here or whatever. You know what I mean? And I didn't have those types of thoughts. I was like, well, this is different. This is new, you know. Did he have the pumpkin head special effects? No, but I don't think he needed them, you know? So I dug him.
One of the things that, so when I went and did the original script, Bloody Bobby, which is now coming out retitled Legend of Fall Creek, I wanted to have a villain, a monster that goes, you know, that is a movie monster, that is a Jason Freddy. Type of thing. And you could tell by the film, I'm hugely influenced by John Carpenter's Halloween, which most filmmakers are with that do horror. You know, it's a masterpiece. So when I decided I wanted to do something on Halloween, I wanted to change it up where what's more Halloween, you know, like Michael Myers is great and awesome, but he's an adult going around killing people. He's the boogeyman, the shape.
Right.
So I wanted to take it in a different direction where I'm going to make my monster a trick-or-treater. And what's creepier than a kid running around killing people?
I'm telling you, and if anybody says different, I'm going to tell them, go watch Pet Sematary again. The creepiest thing in that is the little kid. You know, nobody wants
to be a little kid. To this day, seen a lot of horror films. I've seen a lot of horror films, but the original Pet Sematary, where Herman Munster gets his Achilles tendon cut by the scalpel from the little boy, it still gets to me to this day. it's horrible. It's horrific. It's amazing.
There were two great shots in that film. Well, there was a million great shots in that film. But the ones that are burned into my brain forever, I'm sure I'll be on my deathbed and it'll be rattling around in there, is the one you just described with the scalpel. And it was only a scene like where she was having the wife was having a flashback to her mother or sister or somebody, I can't remember.
The sister,
but she had like
Zelda.
Meningitis,
yes.
Terrible. Yeah,
oh,
and they had, I don't know who did this. makeup on that, that I was like, as a kid, I was like, holy moly, that's not good at all.
That's a good example of indie filmmaking, because a lot of people look back on that film, and for years people have like a love-hate relationship with it, but it was an indie film. It wasn't made for that much money. You know, it's like less than $1 million, you know, for a Stephen King adaptation. That's extremely low. But they did a great job, and I'm not a fan of the reboot that came out a couple years ago.
It doesn't
hold up, and they had all the special effects and everything, and they couldn't hold up to that indie vibe that they did in that first one. And it's still, I would say it's in my top 10 favorite horror films of all time.
Yeah, I agree.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Older adults and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions are at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. If you are at higher risk, you should stay home as much as possible and avoid close contact with people who are sick to protect yourself. Call your doctor if you have concerns about COVID-19 and your medical condition, or if you get sick. For more information, visit cdc.gov.
Metal Babe Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi folks, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool. And these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
Well, you know, and I'm liking Black Pumpkin a lot now, too, because, like you said, you have the twist. I wasn't going to mention it, but you let the cat out of the bag. I didn't, you know, that was great, I thought, when it was revealed during the film. And I was like, whoa, that's something you don't see every day. And you know, it's interesting. My wife is into, don't worry about me, folks, but... Man, it's so funny. She loves all these, I call them murder shows, where, you know, some guy's pissed off some woman and she's running over him with a car next. And, you know, she just loves watching.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to keep on my toes and not make her mad because she has all these ideas now. cyanide pores. But anyhow, it was so funny because we've had a conversation. She goes, "Well, are killer psychos, are they made or born or a combination of two or?" You know, and I'm like, well, there you go. There's a little kid. You know, we're watching you. I'm like, there you go.
Well, when we came up with when I came up with the idea of Bloody Bobby, it actually started at I was drunk in Whittier, California, in Uptown Whittier, with all the Victorian homes, and it was a Halloween party. And I don't know if people are familiar with Uptown Whittier, some beautiful homes. Everything was decorated for Halloween, and one of these people go missing. You drank too much, wandered off, and we were next to the hills. So people were kind of looking for him. They were a little worried, and that's where the whole inspiration for Bloody Bobby came about. And the funny thing is the person that went missing is Kurt Clinton, the actor who plays Alex Griffin, and in the original Legend of Fall Creek, he plays the twin brother Reggie Griffin. So, see how everything connects. we found him, and we dusted him off, and we keep the bottle. No, I'm kidding. he joined us very early, and Kurt's so interesting. He has his hero in life is the late great. It's how you look at it. Andy Kaufman, you know, people do still believe he's alive out there. But he's a huge Andy Kaufman fan, and so was I. So having that connection helped us kind of brew almost this trick, urban legends and Bloody Bobby, and just owning that it's in there. Like if you go on, there's like a Twitter account out there that has a legitimate hotline for Bloody Bobby sightings.
Really?
So people can call in and tell us their own stories of Bloody Bobby. We want it interactive. We've had people send in pictures of Bloody Bobby, and we've given out the backstory. You know, pretty much a little kid went missing in 1988, and he was bullied by a bunch of his friends, and he would get these chronic nosebleeds, and they called him Bloody Bobby. So when the ghost of Bloody Bobby comes back, when your nose starts bleeding, you're next. And that was kind of like our whole mythology behind it. And Kurt took it into a wonderful area. He wanted background of where Bobby went missing. So we came up with Diablo's Den. And then we actually have a short documentary that I did of mockumentary of Alex Griffin telling us the story of Diablo's Den. So we have this whole mythology of everything that happened in Fall Creek Valley. It's amazing. It's just like, and it's just having fun. And there's no rules. We just roll with it. And if we like one idea and we put it out there, and people seem to have feedback on, no matter how ridiculous it is, we just keep adding to it. And we have a DJ, Dr. Daddy D, who floats around and on the radio that has like a little backstory. And we've developed stuff since 2010 with so many angles that we can go. It's like we moved this Fall Creek Valley cinematic universe. And it's pretty much just us on the internet doing stuff and creating and having fun with it.
That is so cool. And I love that because it just goes to show, number one, the passion of the filmmakers. And number two, you've created this entire infrastructure now that, you know, you can use again and again for sequels or spinoffs or what have you, you know.
That's actually become a curse. There's a curse at that, too, even though it's, like, great that you have this material that you could pull from. There's a curse because sometimes when you're writing these scripts going, okay, we're going to do this story and this aspect of what we put out there, but you're kind of tied in, so it's almost like you don't want to keep rehashing to the new viewers what everything is going on. So it's like, because you're just going to bore people. So sometimes, especially in Black Pumpkin, one of the faults of it that I see is we just kind of assume everyone knows what's going on. So we don't spend that much time explaining what Bobby
right.
is. And hopefully, if they like the film enough, they'll go and find it out themselves. But yeah, so I love it. I love what we've created, and a lot of work. But I think it's going to turn out fine. And yes, there's besides Legend of Fall Creek, which was a prequel. I already have a treatment for a third Bloody Bobby installment, which
nice.
We will go about 10 years. What happened to Black Pumpkin?
Nice. Well, you know, and it's got a supernatural element to it too. So you're not, you know, which is definitely cool and opens up possibilities and whatnot. You know, you're not pigeonholed.
One of the things that instead of killing Bloody Bobby, like I always had this idea, like let's just flat out say you can't kill him. But you can outlast him. He's only around for 24 hours. So if you can survive the 24 hours, you live. Doesn't mean he's going to come back the next year after you, but you know, you have a whole year to live. But yeah, I wanted, and instead of going the Michael Freddy route where you kill him every film and then he just comes back, let's just admit that he doesn't die. And he's supernatural.
Right.
You can't stop him. You can only outlast him. So now you're only, instead of finding the silver bullet in the script, you just have to, you know, follow the clock.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Get him to
midnight. Let me ask you, there's so many cool, I really love the actors and the thespians in the film. Everybody does such a great job. Did you know? Well, you mentioned that you did know one of the actors. Did you know the others, or did you go through a casting company, or how did it all happen?
Okay, so Dave Uchansky was early on in the film, or in the first film. He was probably right around. He was actually at the party helping us look for a drunk Kurt in Whittier Hills somewhere, So I wanted that Professor Loomis type character where the sheriff kind of knows the past, so he can kind of link us a little bit. So, but I thought, I don't want to give too much away, but I thought he got off kind of easy on the first installment, Legend of Fall Creek. So I had to put him through more peril this time around. And so he opens up the film, which I was since he was with the project for so long, it was only fitting that he got to have all that screen time, pretty much just playing cat and mouse with Bobby. And so then Wesley, who played Deputy Trevor, is actually a character from Legend of Fall Creek. And Wesley Szabo has been with us for years and very supportive of the film and the whole project. Let me see, people from before. Oh, Dr. Frank. My amazing commercial of Dr. Frank's Gold Butter Zombie Bars is actually an actor, Christopher DiMacci, a character actor who you've seen in all kinds of stuff. I met him early on, a friend of Kurt, and he actually bailed us out making Legend of Fall Creek because we had at the last minute an actor wasn't able to make the shoot. And so we hurried up and like literally with hours to spare, got Christopher DiMacci to drop what he was doing, come out and play the character of Will. So since Will is not in Black Pumpkin, I thought it was only fitting to bring Christopher DiMacci back in some way. And I actually love him. He's so fun to work with. He's such a character in himself. And doing that Dr. Frank commercial was an evening. It was like so much fun, and he pulled it off. You know, like can you imagine just showing up and just you're just doing a commercial in full makeup, and now he's singing a song he's never heard before. You know, it's just like it's awesome, and he got it right away.
I love it when things come together like that. You know, because I don't know in your world, but in my world. It doesn't happen all the time, you know. It's usually the opposite. You know, things aren't coming together. So I really celebrate when they do. And it sounds, but it sounds like, man, things just kind of clicked on so many levels for you with this project. You know?
We got lucky. And, I'm not saying that the whole process wasn't easy. We had, in the making of Legend of Fall Creek, we had a huge production problem that almost got it to where the film would never be seen.
Really?
And through, yeah, by hook or crook, we were able to change up the concept a little bit in what we had, make it a grindhouse film. So we have like the effects of the film ripping and camera shaking and all that. And we showed it at the first Kapow Intergalactic Film Festival, and it went over extremely well. So that's when I got approached by Triangle Road Entertainment about making a sequel. But I was just a writer and came on later as a producer in Bloody Bobby, you know, a.k.a. Legend of Fall Creek. So when I was approached to write a sequel, my only demand was, you know, then I want to direct, because if anyone's going to fuck up this film, it's going to be me. And that's how I basically got it.
And they said, okay.
Black Pumpkin plan was in my head more, or came on more, that was in my head came out on screen as of Legend of Fall Creek. It was more us making do with what we had. Films turned out differently in their own way, but still entertaining. So I think it's just being that artistic style where, okay, it's not what we originally wanted, but we have this and we can do this with it, and you just work with it. And I had a bunch of people that had that same vibe. You know, it's almost like you're a musician and you're just jamming and you're just trying to make a song. And we got very lucky. We got lucky twice. I mean, we made films and we finished films, and they're with Uncorked Entertainment, and it's a little overwhelming, but it's all
good. I can imagine.
I'm glad people are checking it out.
The cool thing with working with a company like Uncorked is, I'll tell you, just know, again, I'm not in that business. Let me preface this, but I will say, I, especially during the last year, you know, with all the lockdowns and everything, I have, I have flipped through the old Roku and streaming platforms a few times, you know what I mean?
yeah.
And like, oh, what the hell is this? And I'll turn something on and I see that Uncorked, the blood flowing over, you know, or I don't, maybe it's wine. I don't know what it is. But that opening, you know, little scene there. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I see that a lot. So they obviously know what the hell they're doing, you know? And
yeah.
You're working with them.
I always felt like when they agreed to do, when they picked up Bloody Bobby, you know, Legend of Fall Creek, I told them, like, well, you know, we're going to be doing a sequel. And so Keith and the Uncorked guys, they had this whole idea about Black Pumpkin and Bloody Bobby and how to roll it out. And it seems a little backwards right now, but I think in the long run, no one will, you know, we're just building a fan base for the Fall Creek Valley characters. And they definitely have their vision, and they kind of let me get away with whatever I want. There's no micromanaging. They're awesome. They're supporting the film, and it's great. And so I'm definitely going to be using Uncorked in the future. Because they do give me that artistic freedom to pretty much do whatever I want.
That's awesome.
I guess
that's
within
fantastic.
Reason. I haven't pushed I haven't pushed the envelope too much on them, but yeah.
Well, you know, it's, hey, they seem to be digging what you're doing. And as an artist, I'll tell you, there is no better feeling. You know, there's no better drug than that when people are getting where you're coming from, because that doesn't always happen. And man, here it is. You're making it happen, and I'm excited, man. I'm inspired. You know, it's very, very cool. It's amazing. Now, a lot of people, I did see something when I did my little Google search there. So he's like, well, this is a Halloween movie, but it's coming out after. I'm like, well, things happen, man. And the thing is it, it's good that it is, because, you know, frankly, I'm sure people, I'm not putting down Hallmark movies or anything, but you need something. The horror people are in a dry spell right now, man. Let's, you know, all they got
I kind of feel
another.
Yeah, they got Hallmarks and stuff, even though I do have a passion for Christmas horror films. I do think that Black Pumpkin being a Halloween film coming out on Christmas, while it may sound weird, I think it's working. People are actually going to it. You know, people that, you know, our Halloween was cut short. You know, COVID, you know, sucked the life out of it. So maybe people are just like dreaming of better days, remembering better days of Halloween, where you can actually like leave your house and go trick-or-treating and all that stuff.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime, and treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit makingcancerhistory.com.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beattie, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are 2 separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another. A friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Ruxgear, the online webshop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierox.us.
Exactly. It's, well, you know, in our house, we definitely have our Christmas stuff up, but it's funny, on the inside of our door is the Halloween wreath that was on the outside of our door a couple months ago. That's all the wife. She's like, I can't let it go. I can't. I'm like, I get it.
Well,
keep it up.
This year in the apartment, I have 2 little ones. I didn't put up a tree. I just kept up the Jack's cube and decorated Jack's skeleton.
That's awesome. I just dated a girl years ago.
if you put up Nightmare Before Christmas stuff, it literally lasts for 3 months. You don't have to worry about it. Take it down in January.
I'm telling you. I dated a gal, and this gal managed a Hot Topic, and this is years ago in my younger wolfing around days. And so you went in her apartment, and it looked like Hot Topic had thrown up. You know, I mean, it was just living dead dolls everywhere. And but she had a tree, like a fake Christmas tree, and she would decorate it. There was a whole house is all gothed out, you know, and just spooky and everything. And then she had this tree by the window that she would decorate whatever holiday. If it was 4th of July, there were like red, white, and blue things on it. Usually Barbie heads painted red, white, and blue, but that's another story.
That's the Hot Topic gothic vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that's what she was. She was into it, man. I have no idea whatever happened to her, but she, I'm sure she's doing well. I hope she is. Don't send me an email, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, so this is cool, man. So this is out, and it is out everywhere. So you can stream this, you can watch it. I know we're not supposed to be hanging out with our friends and whatnot, but I know a lot of people are doing little Christmas things where they're hanging out with their immediate family and whatnot. Mm-hmm. What a great film to put on when everybody's there. You know, your crazy uncle bitching about politics. Say, hold on, I got a film to watch.
Exactly. Avoid the politics conversations and just watch a 10-year-old going around killing people.
Exactly. and then just stare at the person who's trying to talk about politics.
I will tell you something.
I love it.
This will be the most political I get, but it was very interesting. So when we were shooting Black Pumpkin, one of the featured gags is the Stabbing Cabin, which is the bully's van, right? And so people that haven't seen the film, there's all these bumper stickers on this van that, you know, it's a beat up, beat the shit van. It looks like a child molester van. It's a very creepy van. And there's signs, are there stickers on it that says, don't laugh, your daughter's probably in here. Honk if you're horny, you know. caution, frequent stops at your mom's house, you know, all this stuff. And then on the side of it is we had these porno letters printed out that says the Stabbing Cabin. And it's on there. And so this cabin, or this van barely ran. And so when the filming was over, we parked the van in front of the producer's house, or Shada, the producer's house, for a very long time. And it looked like a child molester was, like, creeping out in front of this house for months. But the amazing part is, out of all that stuff that was on the van, the only thing that kept getting vandalized was a Trump-Pence sticker. And Make America Great bumper sticker that was on the bumper. So that is California, man. That is that's Hollywood.
I'm telling you.
They would they're okay with everything else. They just probably expect it's a movie prop. But the Trump sticker, that was going too far.
I'm telling you, it's a weird year, you know. I remember our neighborhood where we bought our house. We're 30 minutes south of Mar-a-Lago. Upper middle class neighborhood and whatnot on the beach. And man, there were a lot of Trump signs 4 years ago, and there was only about half as many this year. So, you know,
the Mar-a-Lago people, isn't that area kind of annoyed with it because like there's all this extra security and takes away the town or city's resources? Yeah, like. This is a Twilight Zone. We've been 4 years in the Twilight Zone.
I'm telling you, it's very strange. It's been very surreal. And, you know, hopefully, you know, that'll all say, they closed down the roads and stuff. It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I'll tell you one more political story. I recently moved into this apartment, and I was moving in, and it's a three-story. And above me, there was this buffed up military dude, all tatted up, old, like in his mid to late 60s. And he was, first time I met him, Thomas, he was wearing a MAGA hat. And we kind of like, I'm not a Trump guy, so it was kind of like a agree to disagree type of thing, but we were very cordial to one another.
Right, but you're nice to
people too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
exactly.
Everything was fine.
I have several.
There's a lot of people. Yeah, so there's a lot of people in this complex, right? And this I noticed where he lived because on his patio he would have Trump flags hanging from his balcony, like on the third floor. So a couple months happened, and I don't run into him. And then one day, about 6 weeks to 2 months before the election, I met him passing, and he was wearing a T-shirt that says "Proud Republican for Biden." So I did not want to point it out to him, right? Like, hey, he came around type of thing. I was just kind of like, okay, you know, kind of like ignored it. But it bugged me. I really wanted to know what in his mind made him flip. And so
what was the
election
factor?
Yeah, what finally overfilled this glass, right? And I didn't bump into him for the longest time, and I was talking to my friends, especially the super liberals from Hollywood, and they all wondered also, like, what was that moment, right? So about 2 weeks ago, I'm getting my mail, and I bump into him at the mailbox, and I finally have the guts to talk to this very intimidating old man with tatted up stuff. And so I said, Thomas, I got to know, like, you were a Trump supporter when I first met you, and then I saw you wearing the Biden T-shirt. What turned you against Trump? And so in my brain, I've been mulling this over for a while, and so I'm expecting some amazing answer, you know, that I can like share with people. And he just looks at me with a straight face and says, "Because Trump's a fucking pussy," and that was it. That was my answer that I got from him. And even though I was kind of looking for a little bit more. He was so intimidating. I wasn't gonna ask him for anything else.
Well, you know, the interesting thing too, that to if you carry that logic forward, so I guess Biden isn't.
I really thought it was going to be something else. Like I was looking for that one moment. But instead, some point in the last couple of months, he just decided Trump's a pussy. And he's not going to back him.
Well, that's all right. We'll take it. We'll take it. We might need him, you know.
I'll roll with it,
Exactly. Oh, man. Well, it's a weird year, but, you know, it's a great – back to I don't know if people can hear that or not when that happened. My assistant, the computer with the British accent, just told me, she's like, "You're up against the time," so then I have to hit this button to increase the time. But anyway, I don't know why it has a British accent, but it's weird. But this is a great, I love your film. It's a great, weird film that is just fantastic and so much fun. I want to see this. I want the world to get back to normal, but I do want to see this film on a big screen, preferably a drive-in screen, because I think it would really fit well with that, you know?
But thank you.
At least in my opinion.
The drive-in, I don't know if your people out there who are familiar is Joe Bob Briggs. Joe Bob Briggs' last drive-in theater on Shudder has been a huge, for horror movie fans, it's been like a godsend from him being back on the air. And he... You know, I'm what he refers to as a mutant. I'm one of his mutants who love the drive-in. The drive-in will never die. And yes, when Black Pumpkin to me is the perfect drive-in movie. And I would love to see when Legend of Fall Creek comes out and doing a double feature of Legend of Fall Creek and Black Pumpkin.
Oh, that would be
epic. And I talked to people about putting something together for next Halloween. Is really make it interactive and fun and all that, because, you know, the drive-in's been, it's got a little bit of a comeback here, you know, because people can't do the theaters.
Oh,
I just hope that instead of closing these things down, they realize how much fun they are to keep open.
Oh, I'm telling you, man, one of my best memories of high school was, I was friends with this guy, and he was he had taken, he finally got enough courage to ask this gal out, and she said yes, and they took it to the drive-in. So unbeknownst to them, the rest of the gang, me and my other friends, totally went to the drive-in as well. And we, what were we watching? It was one of the Stephen King Creepshow movies. And the Thanks for the Ride hitchhiker guy, it was during that scene. And we had used ketchup and Jell-O and all kinds of stuff on one of our other friends and just made him up. And right when Bill was making his move, man, in the car, he jumped up on their windshield. Did his lip. You had to get stitches. You know, with friends like that.
The drive in. I grew up in Riverside, and there was the Van Buren 3, which is still there, and it's one of the surviving drive-ins. And I remember one year, I went with my friends got to go to the drive-in with their older brother who could drive, and he goes, "Well, I'm not paying for you guys," and we're kids, we're like poor, right? So we agreed to go into the trunk. So we went into the trunk, and you always hear that about the drive-in, people sneaking in the trunk. Well, I don't know if you've ever been into a trunk before for a length of time. It's really hot and uncomfortable. And we came out of it. Yeah, he opened up that trunk to let us out. It was like an Indian sweat lodge. It was disgusting. It was like, yes.
Oh, and, man.
That was for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So
that's a good movie to see the drive-in, too.
Exactly.
Oh, man, that's awesome. That's cool. Well, your films, I cannot wait to see. It's The Legend of Fall Creek. It's not Bloody Bobby anymore. The name has changed.
No, it's Legend of Fall Creek. And it's coming out in February. It's a grindhouse film. So people that understand grindhouse films, there's a little bit of a description about what a grindhouse film is at the very beginning, so you know what you're getting into. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And people that like Black Pumpkin, when they watch this film, or Legend of Fall Creek, they're going to be able to connect a lot of dots going, oh, that's this person and stuff like that. So I think while the films are their own entity from each other, because they're several years apart, at the same time, they do complement each other. We did a screening when Black Pumpkin came out. We did a screening for the cast and crew at the Kapow 3 in North Hollywood. And we showed it with, at that time, Bloody Bobby. And a lot of the actors who were in Black Pumpkin, they didn't know a lot of the stuff. So they weren't familiar that there was like, you know, they weren't familiar with the backstory, and they really liked it and had a lot of fun. So when, you know, watch, enjoy Black Pumpkin for what it is. And then when Legend of Fall Creek comes out in February, you'll be pleasantly surprised on the whole series. I guess I'm making a series now. Holy crap. All right.
There you go.
Yeah.
This is going to morph into, you're going to have the, you know, remember how Nightmare on Elm Street had the TV series then?
Bloody Bobby, I could just imagine, yeah.
That's awesome.
You know, it's so funny. It's like, you know, both Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street had their own spin-off TV shows. I've sat and I've watched the Nightmare Before Christmas documentary, Never Sleep Again, which tells you everything, you know. And then I've watched the 7-hour documentary on Memoirs of Crystal Lake, and I think, you know, when you're listening to the filmmakers talk about their films, they all knew they were making low budget horror films, but they look back on it and go, how much fun was that? This is fun. We got to take these movies for what they are. And that's the spirit of Black Pumpkin. Just take it for what it is. Just don't try to analyze it. Don't try to overthink it on why they don't use a cell phone at a certain time or whatever. It's a horror film. Just have fun with it. Enjoy the ride.
Exactly. And it doesn't, you know, not everything needs to be. That's one of the things. And I'll tell you, I did the whole art school thing and whatnot. I could not stand those first undergrad classes where, you know, what is this painting symbol? Shut up. The guy needed rent is what it, you know, I know that now. There wasn't any big deeper meaning, you know. It was called food.
Exactly.
You know, but everything doesn't have to be. No, some stuff is, and I get it. And you know, those parties are fun to go to sometimes. But you know, for the most part, man, just especially with a horror movie, man, it's just it's fun. Watch that
that's
stuff.
That's
why they make.
Most horror fans are like that. They just want to enjoy the separation from reality. For, you know, 2 hours and just enjoy the ride. And they're passionate about their genre more than I think any other genre out there. Probably next would be like sci-fi fans, but horror fans are so passionate about what they like and what they don't like. But to be honest, they'll always support you somehow. You know, these horror fans,
right,
even if they don't like your stuff, they will support you. And that's cool. It's a cool community out there. And, I love the fans. I got to meet a lot of cool people. Yeah. So just enjoy the ride. That's basically
it. I'm telling you, I have a whole side of my business where it's just horror paintings, you know, that it was funny. I started doing those back in during the 2007-08 recession. You know, people weren't buying big paintings of Madonna suddenly. And I'm like, man, I need food.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're asking me to paint zombies. I'm like, well, hell, I can paint a zombie, you know, not a problem.
Yeah.
How many you want? You know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because, and it hasn't waned, you know. I'm like, usually trends will come and go, you know. That one hasn't. And it's, I think that, you know, people have been watching. I'm telling you, I think a lot of those cave paintings that cavemen painted in caves, of big, scary, you know, mastodons or whatever, woolly mammoths, they were probably scared of those things, and that's why they painted them. You know, that people like to be scared. They like the trip. And I get it.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, like when you go into a movie and a movie theater and these people are overreacting and yelling at the screen and they're complaining about it, I go, no, that's part of the fun. Like, I want people to yell out at the screen saying, don't go in there and stuff.
Absolutely.
Like that. And it's fun. It's interactive. It's the trip. It's having fun with everything. Yeah.
I'll tell you a good example of that. Is the movie is boring as hell, is Rocky Horror Picture Show. If you watch that at home by yourself, yeah, it's not that fun, man, unless you're, you know, I don't know. It's way more fun when you're with everybody is what I'm saying, and they're going crazy. And
I remember seeing the Rocky Horror Picture Show on VHS. I'm thinking, I was a little kid going, what the hell is this? And then I went years later when I was in college to a screening, and it's like, oh, I get it now. I get it.
Yeah.
It's the interactive. Yes. Oh, and who doesn't want to do the time warp? It's better than just listening to the time warp on your VCR at home, watching it. But it's so much better when you're in the audience and everyone's getting up and doing the time warp.
Yeah, man, yeah. And that film's had a long run. And people, the
Absolutely.
Weird part about that, I mean, those people have been, I know people, my wife's really into the whole cosplay thing, and I'm like, well, I remember people cosplaying at that thing in 1982, you know?
I would like to say that that might be one of the original fan-based type cosplay type of thing, where it was like a big, it was a big thing. And for a movie that didn't go anywhere when it came out to become this, you know, legend, it's pretty amazing. And they still have very passionate fans, you know? little goth kids that come out and want to do the Time Warp.
Absolutely, absolutely. I remember years ago, man, this is like, I don't know, almost 20 years ago, it seems. Well, 15. They were having a Rocky Horror convention. It was a whole group of, you know, the official Rocky Horror club or whatever, fan club or whatever. And they got a hold of me. I was living in San Diego, and they said, hey, can you do a bunch of Rocky Horror paintings, you know, for the convention in 3 weeks? And I'm like, well, do you think those people would be interested in that? And they're like, Jamie, these people have been dressing up like and have seen this movie 300 times. They've bought, and they don't make any new merch. They've bought all the merch that is ever available. Yes, they're interested in new stuff. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, I proceeded to knock out 70 paintings in 3 weeks and then Greyhound bus ride them all up to Vegas because my friend with a truck bailed on me. That was fun. But anyway, you know, we sold out 3 hours. And I'm like, man, that was a fun weekend having that much cash in my pocket. But, you know, the thing is it just goes to show what a dedicated fan and horror movie people are like. And I'm not saying all horror movie people are into Rocky Horror. What I'm saying is dedicated, passionate fans. And you're right, man. There is nobody more passionate than horror people. And they like, and not just in a negative, you know, oh, I'm going to criticize her. They just support and they're into it, man. They're like, hey, we have new horror stuff to watch. Let's watch it, you know?
Well, part of the fun with horror films is there's a group of horror movie fans that like the low-budget, cheesy stuff. And as long as the filmmaker and the filmmakers had passion for it, they're going to get supported. That's part of it. It's just part of the whole drive-in, the whole B-movie, the grindhouse. Horror fans love it, and they eat it up. And I'm one of them. You know, I'm the one that every month I'll go on my iTunes and see what comes out new on, you know, for horror, and I'm watching it.
Low budget, high budget. Do you have one of those apartments that? Because I'm thinking of my friend Amy. You walk in, and hers is very, you know, she's a very elegant horror fan. She's very into it and whatnot. But man, she has just bookshelves and walls covered, and she doesn't sell it. She doesn't buy or sell. It's not a business. She's a collector. Everything from those Funko, you know, Freddy Krueger to anything horror.
I have a Funko horror collection. Yes, I do. I have my apartment is ridiculous. I tell people all the time, this is not a grown adult apartment. Like I have in my bedroom, I recently just got with my boys. I got interested in black lights and fluorescent paint. So we're painting. I have a big painting. I'm looking at a big black light painting of Oogie Boogie right now. But it just happens to be next to Bob Ross. So that just shows like I'm all over the place. I have Jason Mask hanging up. I got stuff from – I'm a huge It guy. I like both versions of Pennywise. It's like it goes to a point where you hang up the frame picture of something, and it looks good.
Right.
It ties the room together. But then you start adding, like, you know, a picture of Slimer next to it from Ghostbusters. It just takes on a life of its own. So people know what they're getting into when they walk into my place. It's like it's a collector's room. I'm like a con. I'm like, I could be like a little horror con type guy. They could come into my room and just look around, little museum.
Well, and it's cool, you know. I mean, and everybody has their thing. My wife has a, you know, oh my gosh, we've built special bookshelves that go floor to ceiling. You know what I mean? She,
one's
a Boba Fett bookshelf, and then it goes to a horror bookshelf. Nice. You know what I mean? And it's the only bad part about that. I'm one of those. I'm very type A as far as the house goes, and I'm like, oh, you need to dust your bookshelf. She's like, well, it fits.
Oh man, like. When you have when you have to dust everything, it's like a day long project. But no matter how small your place is, this stuff collects dirt and grime, and it's a pain in the ass. It's like, wow, it's like a lot easier when it was just a white wall. Who wants to look at a white wall?
Nobody. Well, that's awesome, man.
One of the things that people, when they come over, and I have all this horror movie stuff, right? I'm also a positive dude, right? So I have my little shelf, my little unit, where it's like, I call it like my little shrine. And so you have Clive Barker, Hellraiser, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre and stuff from Evil Dead movies. And then you have this designated shelf just to Fred Rogers. And it's so weird and out of place. But holy crap, I think the world would be so much better place if we just all followed Mr. Rogers. Sure, he wouldn't
Absolutely.
Like some of the stuff that I'm doing on screen, but that positivity and just being nice to one another, it kind of centers me. And I like Bob Ross.
Absolutely.
That positive energy type of thing, yes.
And there's just a little kindness, you know, some lady the other day, we were at Michael, and I don't know, they had all the Christmas stuff out. My wife was looking at Christmas ornaments. Our cat knocked her Christmas tree over a couple weeks ago, and so we're replacing a bunch of Christmas ornaments. We have all kinds of weird-ass ornaments, you know. And so she's looking to try to find more weird-ass ornaments. And I don't know, somebody knocked a Christmas pillow on the ground, and I didn't think nothing. I just bent down, picked it up, put it back on the shelf, and, you know, followed my wife along down the aisle of Christmas ornaments. And some old lady came up, or seasoned lady, I should say, came up, and she's like, that was so nice. The world needs more of it. You know, made a big – I'm like, lady, I just picked up a pillow that was on the floor. You know, made a big deal. But I was thinking about – you know, we were talking about it on the way – we were driving, and my wife's like, what are you thinking about? And I'm like, well, that lady, you know, and whatnot. I said, I think the world – she's right. The world needs more of that. Just people – being cool, you know, being nice.
Exactly.
You know,
Why do we, like the 90s where everyone was grungy and unhappy, that's long gone. Let's turn this shit into positivity and be nice and just treat people, you know, as you want to be treated. It's such a simple concept, just to be nice. It really is. And that's one of the cool things about Christmas is people are a little bit nicer to one another. And they're thank you, and they're helping with, you know, one another. Of course, then you still find the douchebags that will cut you off, you know, to steal your parking spot, or you know, to grab something off the shelf right before you're gonna grab it. But it's, you know, for the most part, I think, especially nowadays, we need to really focus on the positivity and kindness to one another, and just kind of, I like to say that we just have to respect that other people with different, you know, beliefs or whatever can exist. We can all exist together. You don't have to like wish harm on people. Just be positive and be nice and make the world a lot better place. As on the guys who make horror films where I chop up teenagers, you know. But yes, we do need positivity.
You know, but the thing is that's a nice, you know, it's not to get all psychological or something, but I think that's needed, you know. That's kind of a nice release, you know, in the cultural zeitgeist. It, you know, people. I don't know. I'd rather people go to and I don't think horror movies are that bad. I don't think that they're. You know, like I said, my wife watches all these murder shows. Not on one did any of them ever say, "Oh yeah, this person watched Psycho 300 times, and guess what? He turned into a psycho." You know what I mean? We're always watching weird stuff, you know. It's and by weird, I mean like uber normal types. And it's like, oh, why would you watch, you know, Friends on a loop? I don't know, but you know, that's what he did.
Yes.
You know? Well, I get it. I understand why you went crazy.
Serial killers on watching too much Ross and Rachel. Perfect.
That's right.
That could be the new thing. Yes.
That's funny.
Yeah, you would have been normal if he did watch Friends over and over on Netflix one summer. And that just messed him up.
On a loop. Exactly. Oh, that's funny. Well, I have had so much fun today. Ryan, you rock. You are cool. Turned up to 10. You know, I'm going to tell you this. I know you know this already, but in case nobody's told you this yet today, keep doing what you're doing because you're super good at it. You know, this is a fantastic film, and I can't wait to see the next one. I'm very excited. Matter of fact, you say that's dropping in you think around February sometime?
I think it's February 9th. It's a couple months. Yeah, February 9th, I believe. And hopefully I'll be back on your show and we'll talk about that film.
Yeah, that's just it. I'm gonna email Clint and the gang over there at October Coast, and let's get you back on when that for that, because I've had just a blast today. This has been awesome, and
thank you.
It's
fun,
you know. Yeah.
Oh, you, cool. All right. Well, folks, enjoy your holiday.
Yeah, you too, man. You too. You doing well? Yeah, because you got the Nightmare Before Christmas tree.
Yeah, that's right. I got the Nightmare Before Christmas tree.
You gotta make one of them. I love that sandworm when it's eating the tree. That scene in
there. My kids, I have the Alexa, and my kids will just tell Alexa to play the Nightmare Before Christmas song. And then every once in a while, it jumps into this collage of other artists that covered those songs. And the This Is Halloween song is covered by Marilyn Manson. And
You
have Marilyn Manson doing the Danny Elfman, This Is Halloween song, and going, holy crap, like Danny Elfman was so metal, he didn't even realize it at the time.
That's right. It's so true. It is so true. I had a blast. I don't know how I figured this out. I don't even know how it happened, but I figured out we don't get the Alexa, we got the Google one, and but I know it works on the Alexa because I did it at my in-laws. When you ask it, you're like, what noise does an elephant make? And it'll play. It's like, this is an elephant. And it's like any animal. You can ask it. And so then I was like, okay, what can I ask it? What is a dragon sound? What is a ghost sound? And it plays the sample. And I was just doing it to freak my dog out. I'm like, what is a timber wolf attacking sound like? And the dog freaking out. Like, what the hell is this? This isn't good at all.
The Alexa, when I finally got sold on the Alexa, I was talking to someone and they told me what they did to theirs. So apparently, and I did this and I didn't know at the time, I went out and bought an Alexa just because of this. You could change the voice to be Samuel Jackson.
How cool is that?
Instead of Alexa, what's the weather in Los Angeles? She would tell me. Or I could say, Samuel Jackson, what's the weather in Los Angeles? But the cool thing with Samuel Jackson is he cusses. So he's all, the motherfucking weather in Los Angeles is. God bless Samuel Jackson.
That is awesome. That is so cool. Well, hey, we're up against the time, so we gotta go. But I want to let everybody know, and I forgot to mention, we have links up on our show page to the Instagram, the Facebook, the IMDb of Black Pumpkin and all of that. So you can, I want everybody to go over and like and share and follow. And it's really cool. The Facebook page is awesome. There's all kinds of links to reviews and cool stuff and cool pictures and whatnot. Check that out, everybody. Very cool. Well, Ryan, I can't wait to talk to you again, man. You rock.
It was great meeting you, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. Well, folks, that's going to wrap it up for us today. This episode, of course, will be converted to a podcast and pushed on all the various social media platforms and all the podcasting platforms. We're on all the big ones, iHeartRadio, Spotify, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, et cetera. There are 200 of them, man, and we're on them all. So if you want to, and if you go to my website, jamierocks.us, or poprocksradio.com, they both get you to the same place. We've got over, what episode is this? 1,060 or something like that? Crazy. So, if you want to hear me talking to cool people, well, there's 1,000 shows. How about that? Very, very cool. Yeah, folks, so check out our sponsors and whatnot and use their code. They all have a code during the adverts there, the commercials. And, you can save a couple bucks. It's very, very cool. Okay, well, that's going to wrap it up for us today. We will see you next time. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Tana Oli, Pop Rocks Radio. Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.